Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer, middle name I could probably say referencing the Eternals, but it probably wouldn't make sense, Williams.
Yep.
Because these names are confusing enough as it is.
Yeah, that's what I've been dealing with the past couple of years with you.
It's true. And speaking of odd names, we have with us intern slash stenographer slash part-timer slash comic book lore expert Amy with us on the show.
I'm an expert now, shoot.
Yeah, now I get to ask you all the difficult questions.
Well, do you want to know the best part? Hold on, I'm the medium expert.
Hold on. She's the one that could be fit into our budget. So that's...
No, that's true. Yeah. That makes sense.
We have a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped Marvel film in theaters, The Eternals, or just Eternals.
Yeah, I felt that at home. There's no none.
I was like, the entire time I'm telling people, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go see The Eternals.
Yeah, same.
And it's like, I don't know if people are like, what are you talking about? It's like the whole The Suicide Squad thing all over again. Oh, so tune in as we got a great show in store. But before we do, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We got over 290 episodes. 290, 280. We got a lot of episodes. Mm-hmm. Stick around. Oh, yeah. This would mark actually episode less than 290.
Yes.
So we've got a good share of different things for you. Check out our website, filmlosophers.com. We got everything that you could ever look for and everything that you could ever want in terms of a movie conversation. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line on any social platform, whether if it's Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. Also, follow us on any podcast streaming platform, where you can listen to us. Drop us a follow, give us a 5-star review. We'd love to hear from you. And I'm excited to talk about this movie because this is a movie that's been long overdue in terms of projecting from Kevin Feige and everything going on with Marvel. And we finally get this movie that nobody really had an idea how it was going to go. We just knew, hey, part of the cast of Game of Thrones is going to be in it. So it's like, that's what most people figured out of the film. So, yeah, needless to say, when we went to go see it, it was kind of a fresh experience for all of us. And I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about, but I am talking about the Marvel release of Eternals. This was a movie that really does kind of take a separate approach from the familiarity aspect of most fans and kind of drop them into a, you know, brand new arena, if you will, when it comes to comic book heroes and stories. Not many people know about Eternals or The Eternal. I can say The when I'm referencing the about
it's
them.
It's a little The and a big E.
Yeah. I'm anxious to talk about this conversation with you guys. We actually haven't really had a lot of time to talk about it prior to the show. And we are recording this later in the week as, you know, life goes on and we're trying to kind of cope with Thanksgiving and just life. But before we jump into it, Spencer, why don't you give us the official synopsis goodness?
Marvel Studios Eternals features an exciting new team of superheroes in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Ancient aliens who have been living on the Earth in secret for thousands of years. Following the events of Avengers Endgame, an unexpected tragedy forces them out of the shadows to reunite against mankind's most ancient enemies, the Deviants.
Directed by Chloe Zhao, the film stars Angelina Jolie, Gemma Chan, Richard Madden, Kamal Nanjiani, Lauren Ridloff, Brian Tyree Henry, Salma Hayek, Leah McHugh, Don Lee, and Kit Harington. According to Kamal Nanjiani, Chloe Zhao actually used a lot of practical effects for the film and didn't really use a lot of green screen, which is really interesting seeing as, the majority of the film actually looks like it's...
Yeah. It really does look like, yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
I'd like to really see... Girl. I'd like to see, like, the behind-the-scenes video of that to see what she actually did, because we're, you know, us here, we're really big fans of practical effect work, so, you know, knowing that, it's really actually cool. Speaking of the cast, Makari, one of the Eternals, portrayed by deaf actress Lauren Ridloff, is the first MCU deaf superhero.
Yeah, go girl.
Also, speaking of the cast, Ma Dong Seok's debut, it's actually, it was his debut American movie appearance.
Aww.
So that's actually really cool. One last tidbit about the movie. Running at 157 minutes or 2 hours and 37 minutes, this is actually the second longest running film in the MCU after Avengers Endgame. Which ran for 181 minutes, which is roughly 3 hours long. So, and mind you, Endgame felt like it. I mean, it was good, but it felt like it. So as I said, this was a movie we actually hadn't really talked about ahead of time. We just knew we were going to see it, mostly because of the fact that, let's be honest, there was a lot of people who were buzzing about this film. And Marvel does a really unique job of, you know, really promoting their movies to where they even include scenes that are not in the film, much like Spencer's consistent bereavement with the company.
Don't lie about your movies, Disney. Come on.
Oh, man. This was one of those movies where I remember a few scenes from the actual trailers, and I'm like, that wasn't in the movie. That wasn't in the movie. That wasn't in the movie. So... It's been getting a lot of attention. It's been getting a lot of press. It's been getting a lot of reviews. And it was only a matter of time before we actually got an opportunity to talk about it. So, fair warning to anybody listening. We are going to divulge spoilers. This movie's been out for a good amount of time. Not to mention, I mean, the sad thing is that we live in an age where people can get spoilers from anywhere, unfortunately, these days. Whether if it's on TikTok or John Campia dropping pictures that he shouldn't be dropping. Have you guys not heard about that?
What did he do now?
John Campia. So if you're not familiar, John Campia, who used to be on Collider, now he has his own YouTube channel, was sent photos from someone, a part of the, either a part of the cast or a part of the, not a part of the cast, but a part of the production. He was sent photos and he didn't think anything of it. He thought they were just fabricated pictures. And they were actual photos from the set of Spider-Man No Way Home with photos of Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and Tom Holland all in the scenes.
Flipping this is why we can have nice things. Freaking John Campion.
So, nevertheless, John Campion is
like,
in hot
guys,
water.
He's like, hey, guys, this is fine.
Like
he's
don't,
nice in person, but Jiminy Christmas.
Oh, he's great. He's a wonderful guy. I know he didn't mean to,
but he was the Tom Holland of this.
Yeah,
he was the Tom Holland of the Tom Holland movie.
So
way to go, John Campion.
So now there's leaks for that. TikTok is full of like people who take video really quick of like things in the movie and blah 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 blah. So unfortunately, we live in a day and age where it's like living dodgeball. You have to avoid the spoilers now that are practically at your doorstep on your phone right in front of you while you're sitting on the toilet, you know, kind of thing. Okay. So,
a bit too much about what you're doing.
At your door, sitting on your toilet.
Exactly.
That's a proximity problem right there.
I mean,
I don't
if somebody
think
has a toilet they can put in front of your door and
that's
be like,
not up to code, my friend.
Hey, you know what?
That is definitely not.
Nobody's
up to
asking
code.
It. Nobody asked John Campion if it was up to code. That's all I'm saying. But
Marvel did.
Reeling back into the movie we're talking about.
Not toilets.
This particular movie is definitely one that is a mystery to me in terms of its story. So, Amy, yeah. You are actually familiar with some of the origin, if you will, of, you know, who came up with this and kind of some of the key parts of this. Tell us, who are, according to Marvel Comics, not the MCU... she pushes up her glasses.
That's the only way we do this.
Tell us a little bit about who the Eternals are and where their whole role plays in the overall comic book universe.
Well.
Oh, my God.
Just kidding.
Don't make me regret this, okay?
You already regretted it as soon as you said tell us. Jack the King Kirby, of course, is responsible for the creations of the Eternals. This is actually coming back in the late 70s.
Now, really quick, before you continue, For people who don't know who Jack Kirby is, yes. Because yes, Jack Kirby is a notable name here. For people who don't know, what are some of the more notable things Jack Kirby has done?
Besides working with Stan Lee and Marvel Comics. So a lot of your original art that you've seen from a lot of the older Marvel books was actually done by Jack Kirby. What ended up happening is during the 60s, there was a fallout between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. And Jack Kirby actually left Marvel Comics. He went over to DC, where he actually started an entire other collection of heroes and anti-heroes known as the New Gods with DC, which you are most likely seeing characters from his collection, like Granny Goodness, Orion, Darkseid, Scott Free, Big Barda. You'll probably recognize Granny Goodness, Darkseid, and Orion from Justice League, or from, if you are a person that watches a lot of TV, Teen Titans. Yes, and also Teen Titans Go, but we don't talk about that. So after that was actually canned, that entire collection of stories that Jack wanted to continue writing over there of gods, creation, science, fiction, yada yada yada, it got canned at DC, and he came back to Marvel.
He came back
to Marvel. So the Eternals actually came out of him coming back to Marvel because they liked what he was doing over there at DC, and he still wanted to continue to create and write these stories, and Marvel's like, yeah, we'll do that, that's cool. And so we got the Eternals. The original kind of plotline for some of the Eternals actually mirrored a lot of what was happening with the New Gods over at DC. So it got scrapped and rewritten. Canonically, the Eternals are a collection of people who serve the Celestials, and they came to Earth eons and eons and eons ago. They started experimenting on humans, and they created, well, the Celestials experimented on humans and actually created two divergent races. One was the Deviants, aka the messed up folks, according to the Celestials, and the Eternals, which had longer life, and some of them actually maintained power. They did this also on other multiple planets. So there's some that are Kree. Another most notable one was on Titan, which led to the birth of one Thanos, who is, yes, an Eternal. And then progressing forward, the Eternals that stayed on planet Earth ended up protecting the human race that still was around from deviants, i.e. the bad Eternals that came out of this whole experimentation process. And it also should be noted that some of this experimentation that was going on is believed to be what started some of the mutations, X-Men, in humans.
Interesting. Spencer, it looks like you had a question because you look confused.
It's a lot to process. Okay, so wait. All right, so Thanos at one point is an Eternal?
Thanos is an Eternal.
Not so much in the MCU,
not in the movie universe, but in comics, there was three or four planets where the Celestials went and started experimenting on whoever the race was that was there. So the humans, the Kree, the Skrull, and then the inhabitants of Titan. So Thanos, they experimented on, and Thanos was one of those Eternals.
So yeah.
There's also other things that happen with that, but we can't talk about that on air because it might lead to other things. That's a way down the bunny hop hole.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there. So
Secrets, we got them. So
we have a basis for understanding where the Eternals come from in terms of story-wise. So in terms of the film, talking about expectations, Spencer, let's start with you.
Okay, so really for me, this was kind of like another Guardians of the Galaxy for me. I wasn't familiar with these people at all, and I was kind of like, okay, what's going on here? And really for me, what made this movie like hard to get excited about was the fact that Spider-Man is next month, which is unfortunate. because I was like, I really want to see Spider-Man, and then it's like Eternals, and I'm like, okay,
let's do Eternals. Spencer will be No, I hear you.
Yeah,
like
that's just how I'm at right now with it.
No, I hear you.
Spider-Man.
I'm kind of in the same boat in terms of like understanding this team up. I had no clue, to be quite frank. I didn't do any research prior to the film. I didn't look up anything. I didn't, other than knowing of certain particular people who show up in the Infinity Gauntlet because I have the Omnibus. I wasn't aware of any of the characters that we were watching. So it was a very like non-expectation type viewing for me. All I was hoping for, the only thing that I did come into it with, was the expectation of this is a Marvel film. Mm-hmm. Marvel has set a bar with everything they've done so far. And their films usually have this very, very solid, you know, form in how they do things. Very few Marvel films really kind of missed the target for me. Like I wasn't a big fan of the first Ant-Man film. Everybody has their woes about Thor 2, The Dark World. there's those films that really just don't have that strong like attention grabber type presence. And so the ratio was very low in terms of how many they've missed compared to how many they've hit. Sure. So with this one, I was really hoping that this was going to be one of those ones that hits, especially for a movie that I have no clue about, because in the same mindset, like you said, Spence, I actually was thinking the same thing. The Guardians of the Galaxy were a team that I had no idea who they were, but with the area of expertise with James Gunn and everything he did for them, they became pretty much a household name after that. Like, mm-hmm. people knew, like, people were all about the Guardians. So I was kind of hoping that if they did that well with the team up, I'm hoping this kind of team up of an unknown, you know, cast was going to be just as good. Yeah, just as good, because it wasn't James Gunn at the helm. So I'm like, let's hope it'll hit that same mark. Mm-hmm. What about you, Amy?
Expectation wise, I actually, and this is going to sound really funny, I assumed a lot of people were going to hate it.
Really?
Yeah.
What made you think that?
So I kind of officially, unofficially dubbed it the Curse of Kirby. A lot of Jack Kirby's works are very, they're not left field, but they take a certain type of reader or
You're talking viewer. About his actual works.
Like his actual works, yeah.
Not the adaptations or anything.
No. So things that he has actually helmed, like those projects, a lot of people do not find it as engaging. And so it takes somebody who loves a little more mythology with a little extra science fiction spun in to just be kind of like, yes, I like this. Or, oh, okay, I can go with that. So expectation-wise for me, I expected a lot of people not to like it. I expected that it was going to be beautiful and...
don't give anything away.
No. I had to take a breath. It was going to be beautiful and that there were going to be a lot of questions raised about who the heck these people are and why they should care.
All right. So talking about first impressions, as soon as the movie was over, I want to start with Spence because I feel like his is going to be the funniest.
Yeah. Like, okay, so.
See, told you.
This is how I usually go about some things, so I'm okay with this so far. Go for it.
Yeah. Like, I kind of have to give a little bit of a play-by-play because when the movie first started, there's a text scroll. And I was like, oh, this seems like this might be a bit much. Like, hearts were riding on edge.
You're like, words, no.
Like, okay, like, these are good.
I did not come to the movies to read.
Like, I don't know. Sometimes movies, like, when they put that up there, it gets real wild. Like, with, like, okay, there's these people, and they're doing this, and then all these things are happening, and this is the whole, like, they have to give, like, a whole synopsis of what's about to happen, and that always makes me nervous. But, like, immediately after seeing the whole movie, I'm like, this is probably one of those movies that's not for me.
Because, no,
like,
yeah.
Like, there's a lot, and, like, also, this movie was not made for drive-in movies. Like, it was the darkest movie I have ever seen in, like, a drive-in, and I'm like, I don't know what's happening in some of these scenes.
I can't
There are a lot of dark scenes in this movie.
I can't see. Yeah. Someone scoot up. Turn off your lights.
Also, lots of characters. Really hard to remember people's names. Mm. Initially.
Yeah. I agree on some of those parts. Like, for me, leaving the theaters, the first thing I thought was, I need to get to my phone so I can look up stuff. Because, like, there were a lot of things that were not clear to me.
Wait, well, I had to interrupt one more thing. Because, like, during the movie, I looked up Wikipedia.
Do what you gotta do.
I mean, you're in your car, so you can look it up.
I can do that in a car.
Like, at the movie theaters, you bust out your phone and be like, hey, turn on July. And then, and it's probably me who's yelling it to myself. So,
yes, you would.
But the first impression I had was like, I didn't really see how this connected to the overall MCU. Like, there were mentions of other things that had gone on, mm-hmm. like in the universe, like, oh, you know, with a snap of a finger, the Avengers, blah, 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 or the people of this world, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, I could lead the Avengers, or now that Captain Rogers and Tony Stark are not, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
but okay. That had, like, the feel of, like, the Netflix MCU movies, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I was getting heavy Disney Plus vibes out of that. Like, you could have cut this up and turned it into a series. But, I mean, hey. But on the more positive side, bringing it over to Amy.
Yo, yo.
What were your thoughts as soon as the movie ended? Without dropping your phone.
Without dropping my phone. I liked it. Because I'm the weirdo that can sit there and appreciate that this was a hard turn from everybody that showed up expecting for wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, Marvel movies. It hit different. And not in a Thor Dark World type of way. Or even in Ant-Man. Because Ant-Man seriously isn't one of my favorites either. But this one, for me... Me personally, I appreciated what was going on, and my first impression was, okay, I'm still tracking y'all. I got this. And then those end credits were like the nibbly bits for everybody that was expecting like pew pew ba bam bam pew pew.
Yeah, I don't know, because like,
it's okay, you can disagree with me. I'm happy.
No, I do, because the
it fact was also that, my birthday. It, so
it's funny because speaking of that, because like Spencer and I. No, actually, after Spencer, because Spencer saw it before I did, Spencer had mentioned, like, yeah, I heard there was, like, rumblings that between this and the Dark World, people preferred the Dark World that more.
Which is still crazy.
Which is, it's insane. But in some parts, I can also see the legitimacy of that. I don't know, because this movie, yes, if you take it for, like, the sum of its parts... It's okay. It's decent enough. It's good to watch.
If you pretend it's not a Marvel movie.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
actually the point.
That's the biggest problem I have, is that if it wasn't a Marvel movie, like if this was just like a movie outside of the franchise, and they're like, okay, we're going to introduce this group of heroes and we're going to, you know, showcase them and we're going to give it a beautiful story, I wouldn't come into the movie with the expectation of, like I said earlier, you know, okay, this is a Marvel movie. There are certain expectations that come with that, you know, white text on red saying Marvel Studios. Like, there's expectations when you see that.
If this was had like DC's label on it, I'd have a way different opinion. I'd be like, this is pretty good for them. Like,
or Sony.
Oh yeah, even them. And, yeah, like pretty much anyone.
And I think that's something that Marvel's starting to run into, is that they've created such a hardcore fan base of expectation, mm-hmm. that this is a, we're going to be knocked off our feet. It's going to be characters that either we mildly know about and we're going to fall in love with immediately, or it's going to be like, wow, yeah, ah, like type of stuff. And then doing this complete turn to something that nobody knows but is a linchpin to a lot of the next phase, it's a hard left.
Well, and that's a really great point you bring up, because when you think of Marvel, you think Captain America, Iron Man, Hulk. You think of Black
first
Widow.
Family.
You,
the first family.
Well, when you think of MCU.
Fantastic Four is the first family I think of MCU. I demand justice.
Have you seen in the MCU a first family film?
In my mind. So many times.
Well, there's not much going on there, so I know it's probably the only thing there. But
wow.
Do you see how long it took her to catch on to that?
I got to distracted.
Yeah, she was still watching that same clip. That's the thing, though, is that things like that, that's like, those are expected outside of the MCU, in the Marvel comic aspect. But in the MCU, you know, there's an expectation. I mean, we with what we've gotten out of Disney Plus as well for, like, Marvel series, WandaVision, you know, Captain Falcon and the Winter Soldier, you know, and even with Loki.
And forthcoming Hawkeye.
That looks fun.
And exactly, with Hawkeye. Which
is reviews coming out of that so far, that it's fun and people actually really like it. So that's another one I'm like,
But what I'm saying, though, is that, like, with the difference between those series and this movie, it's a definite, like, left turn from the norm in terms of creating engagement that allows regular viewers to be captivated. Like, I think I can honestly say this movie is not, and I don't mean it in like a rating type of way, but in a content kind of way, this is not for kids.
Nope.
Like, this movie
is the first Bam Bam. We had the first Bam Bam moment I recognized in the MCU. I was like, there were children on the other side of me, and they were like 6 or 7. And I was like, your mom and your papa going to be closing your eyes or have a lot of questions.
But outside of, but I'm saying outside of, like, that context, outside of the mature context of this movie, the story-wise is much more mature than for other previous Marvel films. Yeah, you get really hard-hitting storylines in certain ones. You get really important, like Endgame is a really great point to use. You know, you have the whole idea of loss and grief and the power of, like, you know, persistence and so forth. And there's a lot of that in it mixed with everything that's normal about Marvel. And then you take movies like this, and it's like, there's a lot of content in this that is much more for, like, the older crowd, almost like Spence actually called it, like a Netflix Marvel film, like Daredevil or The Punisher, or, you know, definitely Luke Cage or Jessica Jones. You know, I'm not going to mention the other guy, but like, like, you have these stories that are rooted in real world situations, especially like Luke Cage. Mm-hmm. Luke Cage is one of those ones that it was an incredible series. Loved it. However, that isn't something that I would feel comfortable showing to a young person, a child, because they wouldn't really fully grasp a lot of the situations that occur, whether if it's like gang violence or living in impoverished areas, or, you know, things that was the buzzer. I'm right. or situations that bring up in that series. And mind you, it's still a great series. However, it's not something for young people. And I think this was one of those types of storylines where they were trying to make that transition of Marvel becoming more of a entity that showcases things not just for kids, but it speaks more now to the adults. And I don't know if they're trying to, like, track with their audience, like, age-wise, because we've been watching Marvel movies since 2008. Mm-hmm. You know, we got over almost 14 years of Marvel films, you know, that have been brewing for that amount of time.
Bad at math. Please don't make me do this.
And then if we even want to go back further, you know, to the first X-Men film, we got almost 22 years of films in Marvel that have been created so that we could enjoy and our, you know, kids can enjoy and people we know.
I'm going to cherry pick the ones that I don't want to enjoy.
Exactly.
Goodbye, Wolverine Origins.
Oh my gosh. Now we're making that transition into movies that are more geared for grown-ups or adults, and I don't know if the transition was as smooth as they had hoped. Yeah, I agree. Jack Kirby is an incredible author and creator and just genius all around, but you know, I don't know. Let's jump into some of the actors, though. Like, some of the actors were actually really great actors, just looking at the abilities on screen that we saw. Like, a really great favorite of mine was Kamal Nanjiani.
He was so fun as Kingo.
He was great. I loved his performance in this. It felt very loose. He felt very fun, like he was enjoying everything about it. Even when he was fighting, it looked like he was just pew-pewing, like, the entire time. Like,
he kamehameha'd. Yeah. And so just like, yes.
Like, there were a lot of scenes where he was just absolutely great, whether if it was being silly or being serious. And I think that just goes towards like the abilities of that actor. He's just a great actor. He's been doing a lot more purposeful comedic films where he's not just basing it on his ethnicity, but it's more, you know, his humor isn't just based on that alone. It's based on his ability to make light of situations or have fun. I don't know, Spencer, was there anybody that stood out to you?
Yeah, it was Brian Tyree Henry as Faustus.
Yes!
I want to be that man.
He was so good.
He was.
He was great, and then I loved his power just being able to create things with his mind. I was like, I want that. I want to build things.
And you work in IT, so imagine how much easier your job would be if you could do that. It's like, what, you need a new router? Hold on. Wave a hand here, wave a hand there. Boom, there you go.
Yeah, put a black guy who can make things out of my, like, no, this is, I want this. This is for me. I want to be that.
Do you think there was any intentionality behind, and follow my train of thought, you think there was any intentionality behind allowing the actor Brian Tyree Henry to play a black Eternal? Mm-hmm. Who is essentially the cause in the film of advancement in technology, ultimately realizing his what he had created through the witnessing of the bombing of Hiroshima. Mm. Do you think there was any intentionality behind that by the director, knowing as well, like with gun violence and things going on nowadays? Because I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know if it was purposeful, and if it was purposeful, it's a really great, like, kind of, it's a really interesting, like, perspective to take that someone like Brian is kind of the forefather of what we have now as, like, the violence we have in the world.
I don't know, but that's actually a really interesting take because I hadn't thought about that way. Because, like, yeah, like, it does. I mean, I guess that's kind of really the story of humanity when you really think about it.
Yeah.
Like, technological advancement, like, too fast, and then it's like, oh, look what happened. Like, it's actually a really good point. I like that. I don't know how. Actually, I think it would have to be a little bit. Like,
intentional,
yeah.
I think that was the biggest part of Ajak when they were staying together before she let everybody separate. She had to reel him back, and it wasn't a lack of his joy, his exuberance, his ability. He wants to share. When you create something, you want to share with others. Mm-hmm. And just the heartbreak of him being there and seeing this gift, which he saw all of the good, everything that the possibilities for success, and it was turned into a weapon. Like, he even, you know that he was responsible for, even if we trail it back MCU-wise, he was responsible for the creation of the gun, the use of the black powder. Like, all of those things are part of his realm of creation.
Which is where we see in the film where the situation with the conquistadors and the locals, and the conquistadors are coming in with guns and firing and shooting, and Druig even tells, you know, Faustus?
Yeah, Faustus. It's a lot of these names, everybody's name has a root in some other language. So you're reckoning Faustus, Hephaestus for Greek, Ajak, which is Ajax, Athena, Athena, Greece.
Oh, Faustos. That's his name. Faustos. Phaestos.
Faustus.
Faustos.
I mean, it's English. You can say it.
Exactly.
But Do you want me to press the button and go look for phonetics? Because how we spell things ain't how we say things.
Well, it is. That's very true.
It's English. Yeah. It's American English, too.
Either way, back to what I was saying, when Druid kind of tells him about, you know, hey, well, maybe someone shouldn't have introduced this to the people and started kind of advancing technology and blah, 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 blah. And you can see in that moment, like, Brian or Faustos.
Sorry, he's also known as Hephaestus and Vulcan, so try again.
In the movie, it's Faustos. where you can tell he's kind of defending his reasoning behind doing so, and then we get this like flash forward of when he sees the bombing and he's just broken down, realizing the truth of Druig's words. It's just for me that kind of intentionality of that casting for that role to have that kind of impact on the world that we are in today. It does say a lot, you know. Yeah. It's interesting. Amy, you had anything else to add?
That it was interesting, or that he's also the first gay superhero in the actual MCU that they've acknowledged.
No, they haven't. You had Loki.
We're retconning Loki. They never defined him in the movie. Series. In series, yes. Film, no. Burr, 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 burr.
Okay.
It's officially how they wrote it. I'm sorry, but can we talk about his amazing family life? Because it was so adorable, and I just wanted to hug everybody. Sorry. Are we talking about...
I don't know what we're talking about.
I don't know. I got sidetracked.
Did you have any favorite characters?
Yes. Yes, I did. I'm sorry. So, the valet. Oh, my gosh. I literally had him up, and I can't find it now. Harish Patel. Yeah, but I called him a valet. Thank you. Harish Patel.
Talking about incorrect English. Okay.
Oh, him. Okay.
The one that was following the Kingu
with the
around.
With the cameras.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Karun or Karun. Karun. Yeah. However you pronounce
Karen.
His name.
Not Karen.
Here's a Karen.
He was so just delightful. Yeah. Like, it brought so much levity to all those spaces where it's like, this is serious. This is serious. He's like, do it again. And that there was such an honest openness between him and Kingo that it was so much fun to see. And then
also before you go on to the next one with that character, I mean, that's the great opportunity that we got, is that that's the in film perspective, human perspective of everything going on with the Eternals. Like the fact that he's seeing the furtherness of his people in the hands of these five, six, what are they, 10 people? Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that everything hinges on whether or not they choose to decide to try to stop or to allow this thing to happen, which could end all life on planet Earth. And we get that humanity's perspective in that particular character. And it was, that's a lot of weight to put on one particular character. And I think that actor really held it well, especially with his final goodbye. Yeah. I thought that was such a great, like, that was such a great way to not only show that he honors the people who have fought for his planet before, but also honors that whatever decision they make, he hopes that it's for the best, mm-hmm. you know. And it was just a great way to close out that character's role in the film. So,
yes.
And you said you had someone else?
Yes, because I'm going to butcher his name, because apparently in Americanese, he's Don Lee, but
Ma Dong Seok.
Yes, I cannot pronounce it as Gilgamesh. Oh my flippin' golly!
That's good.
This man was so much delight, warmth, openness, caring, and then just a powerhouse of.
And the fact that this is his first American film,
yeah, and he's 50.
Could have fooled me.
Right? He's 50, and the first thing was Train to Busan, was where he was the mm-hmm. first, and then here. And he's not only is he a superhero, a Marvel superhero, but one I swear all of us were rooting for the entire way through. We're like, bring Gilgamesh, 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 Gilgamesh. I swooned. It was just so delightful, and especially as a foil against Angelina Jolie's Thena, it was so good.
Well, and it was great to actually see an opportunity where you had this friendship that was rooted in love that didn't have to lead to like a romantic entanglement. Mm-hmm. Like, mind you, it whether or not if it's intended or if there was anything like, oh, but by the way, I don't know if you noticed, but there was actually this, a wink, wink, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if there was any of that, but the way it played out on screen, I really liked the fact that he was just wanting to be such a good friend to her, that he was willing to stay by her side for thousands of years.
in the Australian outback, and he made pie.
Yeah.
That sequence with the pie was so over, like, no.
So, and mind you, there's a lot of good, there's other good actors that were in this film, unfortunately. Salma Hayek was great, but she wasn't in the film a lot. But in the scenes that she was in, she really did an outstanding job. You had folks like, what's his name? I have to look up his name.
The guy that played Droog.
Yes.
Which we can't remember, but we saw him in The Green Knight.
And yes. Barry Keoghan.
We like your accent, bro. You cool.
He was actually a really great addition. I'll be plain and simple with you guys. I didn't honestly think I was going to like him. Like, he seemed very one-dimensional from the trailers, and it didn't seem like there was a lot of depth to him. But once he started going, and once you actually saw those moments of, like, emotional, you know, projection and him actually getting into that character. And the sad thing is that Droog is essentially a villain in the comics. Mm-hmm. So,
there was something about this guy. I was like, is he going to be the bad guy in this movie? That's why I had I feel like they somehow still kept that, because I felt like I picked up on that a bit.
They kept it a little bit because of the whole aspect of mind control, period, hard stop. Yeah. Is all, you're always like, are you supposed to? And then it always becomes self-serving. Like, there's no way around it. As much as we're like, I'm going to Professor X this and not take over people's minds. He was just like, nope, this is my turf. I say what goes on. And we're like, okay, bye.
Also, Gemma Chan did a really good job.
She was lovely.
I know after Captain Marvel, actually, Gemma Chan herself had said in interviews that she didn't think she was going to come back to the MCU because her character in Captain Marvel dies off. But apparently Kevin Feige had seen Crazy Rich Asians and he really loved her character in that. And so he had invited her back to play this role, which actually still has some sense of longevity because she's not dead in this movie that we know of. A couple of like really missed performances. I wasn't a big fan of Richard Madden's character, Icarus. Maybe not so much the character, but his performance as the character. It seemed really, really wooden throughout the entire movie.
And continually self-serving.
And the sad thing is, he's great in the first few seasons of Game of Thrones when he's still alive before the Red Wedding. He's absolutely incredible, and he does incredible performances there. But in this one, it seemed like he was the dollar store version of Henry Cavill. Like, it just seemed like
that's giving him too much credit, to be very honest. Because what's his name? What's the dude that's Homelander in The Boys?
Oh, that guy.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he gives off that same similar strong vibe, and I'm like, look.
Yeah, but Homelander.
I understand Homelander and The Boys. We're supposed to despise him.
Yeah,
and I'm like, you want to kind of be able to root for Icarus in this, but you can't. Like, it's really difficult, and I was like, no, thank you, bro, no, thank you.
Yeah, a lot of his scenes they didn't really seem to be engaging enough. Like. It seemed like he was really detached as a character from the overall thing that was going on in the film. Whatever scene he was in, even if he was trying to be emotional, it still seemed like detached from everything else that was going on. You
100%.
Know?
Yeah, it was really odd how detached he was. Although, I did appreciate that his character thought forward enough to have Selma Hayek killed by the deviants versus doing it himself and just hoping no one noticed.
True.
Only
very
positive
true.
Of that.
You're like, good planning. Good planning, friend.
A couple other standouts, I guess. Oh, well, another one that I was like, it's okay. Kit Harington as Dane Whitman.
He was playful, but there wasn't enough of him. It was like it was kind of like here's Dane. Dane Whitman, here you go. We've acknowledged him. Boop boop. Bye.
Which Kit Harington himself as well in the entire series of Game of Thrones is a fantastic actor. But as you said, Amy, like, he's in it very minimal. And mind you, when he's in it, it's actually fun, like, watching him in it, but I don't get enough of him in the film.
He's FaceTiming and asking questions about all the superpowers and things that she could do. You're like, good job, buddy. That's exactly what we'd all do. You're like, my boyfriend or my girlfriend has superpowers? Yes. Let's talk about this. Somebody that I wanted to bring up that did not have enough screen time, but she was delightful, but it felt really underutilized, was Lauren Ridloff, who was
Makari,
who is the first deaf MCU character that we've experienced.
Which we mentioned.
Yep. She was lovely. She was playful, expressive, which comes naturally, not comes naturally, but something that has to be used in the deaf community. And I just wanted more of her. So I was kind of mad that I didn't get more.
Yeah, the fact that she had just been in the ship the entire time seemed really kind of like counterintuitive.
Yeah, and she just sat there and she's like, hey guys, are we going home yet? And I was like, girl, where have you been for the last couple thousand?
This is where you've been.
Like, I thought she had died. I got mad. I was legitimately mad. And she had, like, one of the best, hers is, like, I can't say girl Flash. I was like, she was faster than Flash. She was more athletic. And she had, like, the interaction between her and Druig, whatever you want to call him. I keep saying Druid. It was so playful and delightful that I wanted more.
Yeah, it was along the lines of it being not too much, but enough to get an idea that there is some type of like romantic tension between the two. So I did appreciate it. I do agree, like there should have been more of her in the film. And then I just have to ask, does Angelina Jolie age? The woman looks like she never ages.
She is an eternal.
She is like naturally.
Yes.
And the other thing is she always likes to do her own fight sequences. So when she was working with the spear and the other instruments, most of it was her, because that's always how she's been. Like, and I was just like, okay. And I was like, oh, look, you did the Wonder Woman spin on your knees when you're swiping and cutting things. Go, girl, go.
Well, and the great thing is, I don't know if you guys know this, but actually she signed up just to play the role of the film because of her desire to just support the director's vision and Marvel's commitment to expand the way audiences see superheroes nowadays. So it wasn't even so much. She actually came in to play a much smaller part. But it says the film producer, Nate Moore, actually revealed that Angelina Jolie wanted her role for a very, very small cameo, but she was surprised at the size of the role. She really threw herself into Athena and created a movement and fighting style for Athena that was unique. So everything she did in terms of her choreography, she was behind it, you know, in terms of the style and everything. So it's just, it's really great seeing somebody who literally is an eternal, you know, still pretty much keep up with everybody else, because she was pretty awesome in a lot of those scenes.
She was doing, and this is not a dig at Selma Hayek, because I know she was very concerned about taking on the role of Ajax, because she didn't want to be seen as a grandmama. Like, that was one of her big concerns because of her age, and she's a stunning actress. There wasn't, even though she was the insta-healer, which I appreciated, she's like, come over here, let me touch you.
Yeah.
She didn't get a lot of screen time in actively utilizing her powers as a support Eternal. And so I would have loved to see more of that.
And yeah, there's a lot of really great moments that she has in the film. I just feel like a lot of Angelina Jolie's performances, I feel like we got a lot more fighting scenes in the trailer than we did in the film.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene in the trailer where she's, like, fighting off all these different guards. And it's one of the ones where a lot of people who were picking up, like, Easter eggs, like, oh, this shield looks like the one from Captain America, blah, 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 blah.
Do you mean the one that was hanging in Kingo's plane?
No, that's the actual shield. I'm talking about the shields that have, which there's kind of this theory that, you know, Phastos is also the one who helped Howard Stark find the adamantium, or the vibranium, to make the shield for Captain America.
Which makes sense, because Athena in the comic books actually works at Stark Industries.
Oh, really?
Yep. There's this, the Eternals comic books, it didn't stop in the 70s or the 80s, and Neil Gaiman picked it up for a limited run in the early 2000s, which was technically what was supposed to bring the Eternals into a more modern time and retcon some things. So this story is actually taking place at the tail end of Kirby's run, part of it from Gaiman's run. Like, it's all over the map and squishing things together.
Moving forward, one of the biggest questions I wanted to ask you guys, because I know we've talked about already on the show about the formula, if you will, Marvel has used in the past to create their films. We get a lot of that same kind of I don't want to say rhetoric, but like the formulaic way they do things, which it works. It's their formula. Every company has their formula. Pixar has theirs. Disney, you know, Animation Studios, you know, Sony, DreamWorks. Everybody has
their... Sony's still working on theirs. they literally realized...
The problem is they struck gold with Into the Spider-Verse, and then they went away from that.
Tyree Henry?
Yeah.
He's the dad from Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. I'm like, that's why it makes you such a great dad.
What do you guys think in terms of the comparison of this film and the formula used to make this film compared to others? Other Marvel films. Like, do you think it really fits in into... Even in a transitional kind of way, do you think it fits... how Marvel has presented films prior to this one?
I don't, but I think that might be on purpose. Mostly because I think after, you know, as you said, like initially, of 14-ish years of Marvel Studio movies and like them like fine-tuning exactly how they tell their stories, some people are getting burned out on superhero movies. And so at this point, they're like, okay, we need to like pivot how we do things here. Like, take a look at WandaVision. That's a crazy show. Just like, oh yeah, she's in a sitcom now, like doing all this stuff. She-Hulk's coming out. It's a legal procedural based on superhero law. That sounds insane. And so like, I feel like a lot of like their ideas on like how they do things are trying to shift the way that they do things to stay engaging. And some of that's going to be where they have things that are not going to hit with every one. And I think that's going to be okay-ish for the most part. It really depends on, like, you know, broad appeal.
Yeah.
So, like, I think this is, like, them attempting to do something new, which, like, I applaud them for. They don't want to be stuck in a rut of the same old stuff coming out all the time because that's going to get boring. But, like, that's why I can say for me, this is, I'm not, like, quite in their target audience, mm-hmm. but like I like them experimenting. I want to keep them, they need to keep experimenting like this.
What do you think, Ames?
Spencer actually hit the nail on the head because I feel the same way. It does not follow the formula. And for me, I like things that don't follow formulas. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem supporting Grandpapa Lee's, you know, company, even though the mouse now rules it with an iron fist.
Glove, get it right.
Oh boy!
Well, that's an Infinity Gauntlet.
With his Infinity Gauntlet, his Infinity Glove. But this does something with that I think has really been helmed by Feige, supporting the growth and the opportunity to tell stories that he's passionate about, but that also he gets directors with different perspectives and points of views that he's willing to risk money on. Mm-hmm. This story is 100% beautiful, but it does not follow the traditional Marvel formula
narrative and
on purpose. Like you said, Spencer, you can't tell if it is or if it isn't, but it's something that they're willing to bet the house, not even the full house, but bet the house on because they need to use it as a platform for other films that will follow the formula. Mm-hmm. As much as Thor the Dark World is nobody's favorite. If it is, hey, good for you, but it is not, it's not in my, no. Sorry, buddy. And just like the Iron Man films where everybody particularly picks on one particular Iron Man film, I'm looking at you, Eddie.
Iron Man 3.
Because they don't
two like, and 3 both are just kind of weird, but 2 is actually a little better than 3, to be honest.
See, and he does this on purpose, but they all build. They're all interconnected. They're all linked for a reason. Shut your
3 was absolute garbage.
They're doing...
Trevor Slattery. Who the heck?
The fact that they brought him back was crazy to me.
I know. Yeah.
And now you can watch it on Disney Plus. So without utilizing the formula to tell a story, they're taking a risk. And they're wanting, and I think it is kind of a little bit of what you had said earlier, Eddie, that they're trying to grow up with their audience to kind of give them that space for more maturity. And same thing with Spencer said, and I fully agree. People are getting burned out on superhero movies.
Yeah.
Traditional formulaic superhero movies they want to be engaged by a story that either one is unexpected, or two makes them go, oh crap, I totally get with that and I understand where they're coming from. And this movie definitely is not a kid's movie, but it does something in the way of expressing itself, its locations, and its history with such a big nod to Jack Kirby, that it's opening doors in an unexpected way.
See, it's difficult to kind of see because of the fact that you're looking at the overall trajectory of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we've spent the last 12 or 13 the last 12 or 13 years in the Infinity Saga. Culminating in what we got in a beautiful crescendo, if you will, of Avengers Endgame. Mm-hmm. So now in this new era, it seems like they're wanting to kind of up their game. It's almost kind of like how the trajectory of Harry Potter moved, how the films for Harry Potter went from cutesy little kid, Chris Columbus directed, things like that, to like people dying and, you know, battles to the death and killing people and, you know, and things Harry of that sort. Oldman. And you get a lot of that as the films go on, because the movies essentially age up as the kids do in terms of their content and the maturity of them. So here's my probably unpopular but honest opinion. I don't know if the transition was done well enough. I do believe that there has to be a switch. I've been saying it for years. Superhero fatigue is a very real thing. Mm-hmm. And we have been getting into that place to where now we're having, before it was just the more eclectic and artsy directors who are like, oh, Marvel films and superhero movies are being the damnedest thing that's ever.
Who said that? No, someone specifically Scorsese? Said that.
Well, Martin Scorsese said it. Who was recent? I know Robert De Niro had said something. You have a slew of folks, but
yeah. It's older Hollywood, but it's known and well acted Hollywood, yeah. Or well financed. That
was, well, when it first started, it was like the more artsy ones. Like even Werner Herzog, I believe, at one point in time said something, and then he ended up in a Star Wars
Mandalorian.
Yeah, he ended up in the Mandalorian.
I want to see the baby.
But now we're getting folks who are more commonplace in Hollywood giving that same opinion. And I feel like it's becoming more and more of a common mindset of, yeah, I get it. Superheroes, they fly, they shoot things out of their hands. They're super strong. We get it. Like there is that sense that has been growing so much more in the last 5 to 7 years than previous. So I don't know if that's just going to solidify more and more the fan base of the movies of the films, or if it's going to begin to it's almost like a virus going to infect the fan base.
Well, but I mean, the reason for that is because Marvel has an insane schedule of roughly 3 movies per year.
Yeah,
I think even because of COVID, one of these years has 4 unless they restructured it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's the main reason. Like, I know they have to, like, keep going because, like, you know, they're trying to build stuff. But, like, when it's that rapid, like, people are going to just get burned out on
it. Yeah. It's the same situation that happened with Star Wars. That's why we haven't seen anything since, in terms of film wise, since The Rise of Skywalker.
There was other problems.
But at that point in time, because of the fact that you had with Star Wars, you had a franchise that had lasted over the last 40 years, mm-hmm. something that has been in mainstay pop culture and with a solid fan base, and continuing it in the way they did with the prequels and then with the sequels, your fatigue with it began to mirror in the production of the films that were being created, because then the films are now being created to appease everybody and nobody at the same time. And that's how
like a Fast and Furious type of mentality.
A Fast and the Furious burned out after 4.
But that's the thing. They're going, oh, we have a fan base, we should keep going. even with Star Wars, yes, the fan base is 40 years strong, but there needed to be a pullback, which is what they literally were like. It was that the garden hose effect, essentially. The garden hosed us with the new ones, and then they go, okay, and we turned it all the way down, and it's trickling.
Did this woman just say they garden hosed us? That seems very innuendo-ish.
No, I actually made a garden hose, like when you turn on the waterfall
glass.
Yeah,
hey, you know, of
course. Dirty mind for Star Wars. Okay, calm down, homie.
First one who started it over there.
I actually was like not even being weird. Like, so your
garden hose effect.
So
go on with your hose.
So basically, they turned it back.
Hose.
What are you doing over there?
Calm down, Ludacris.
He was in Fast and the Furious.
Yes, he was. It's all circular. So they turned off the tap, essentially, and now are trickling out content. But they're making sure that not only is it good content, but it's engaging enough that it keeps the fan base ready. The problem is that with Marvel, there are so many stories to tell, which I think it encapsulated it best. Thank you, Jeffrey Wright, as the Watcher in the What If series. He goes, there are so many universes and so many stories to tell. And sometimes when you go up to the buffet and you see everything in the line, not only are you overwhelmed and you want to try a little bit of everything, but you know you probably shouldn't touch that chow mein that's been sitting there since 6 a.m. and you're going to poke it anyway. Like, it's...
I don't want to go to the same buffets you go to.
I haven't been to a buffet since before COVID.
No wonder. I would have gotten scarred too if I would have went to somewhere who had a chow mein.
The fatigue is real. When we started out where superhero movies were almost one in a million, the first one I thought of was Spawn or Blade. And then when we started having Batman, where they were still palatable Batman movies, and then it disappeared, and then it slowly came back. And having that ebb and flow gives breathing space for the fans to recuperate, but also for other storytellers to step in. And Marvel, in doing this, it doesn't transition smoothly. It transitions. It's a ham-fisted segue all day with an amazing storyteller. But was it the right fit for traditional Marvel fans? The only time will tell, but so far it's becoming a louder and louder no.
So, kind of going towards the end of this film, because I do want to give it some time to talk about this. I want to talk about the mid and end credit scene. Spencer throws up in his hands.
I don't know anything.
Except it's Harry Styles. That's all you need to know.
I don't even know who Harry Styles was. I was like, who?
One Direction.
Yeah.
So
the first mid-credit scene, we get the reveal that Harry Styles is playing Eros, who happens to be the same person.
Oh, sorry.
Lord above.
I hadn't.
So Eros, the brother of the mad titan Thanos.
Because he's an eternal.
Anyway, Eros, the brother of the mad titan Thanos, shows up where Thena, Druig, Makari, I think that's it, just those three, are out looking for
other Eternals,
essentially. Unable to find anybody, Eros just shows up with his troll, Pip, played by Patton Oswalt, and is introduced to the group, and Eros shows that he is also an Eternal and he wants to essentially help them find their lost friends. Now, with that particular scene, there's a lot to go into that in terms of like who Eros is. Eros, like we said, also goes by another name, Star Fox. He actually had another name prior to Eros, which was Aaron, Eron. His parents changed his name to Eros because he got into a lot of just mischief, and when he went to Earth and did all the things he did, that's kind of where
he got shenanigans, homie.
So,
and he was from Titan. Shenanigans, homie.
Okay. So, so you get a lot of his story in parts of the Marvel comic books. He played a huge role in the Infinity Gauntlet, like I was mentioning earlier. He is also known for a particular storyline where so Thanos is killed. He has the body. They're going to have a burial of some sorts. and the remainder of the Black Order steals the body back and essentially do this thing where they try to resurrect. They're essentially going to resurrect Thanos in Eros's body.
Creepy.
Now, to stop that from happening, Gamora actually kills Eros. But he's an Eternal, and he comes back. So there's not a lot of like depth to where he hails from or other ventures in terms of how it's going to intersect with the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Other than like, I'm really hoping that this just leads to an opportunity where we get that particular storyline with Thanos and Thanos being resurrected in Eros's body, or Gamora and Nebula knowing this is something that Thanos can do, and he shows up in the next Guardians film, and they're kind of like, oh, we got to keep an eye on him because if Thanos chooses to resurrect himself, he can resurrect himself in Eros and kind of thing. But there, outside of that, there's not really a lot else to go on.
How did that even happen? He was snapped away.
Who, Thanos?
Yeah.
But he's still an Eternal.
But I don't... Okay, so here's a question that probably should have been asked earlier. What does that mean?
So Eternals, because of their genetic offshoot, they live... So comic book, they live longer. They're experimented on versions of humans. Right. So they just live a really long time and they gained additional superpowers.
Right.
In the MCU, they've kind of defined them as... They were created robots with superpowers.
It's like Westworld for the MCU.
Yeah, that was a really good way to put that. So that's what we're kind of dealing with. And then Eros, as his name implies, love, wink, he controls people's emotions.
Well, and so here's the long stretch.
Real sketchy.
So yeah, also, Eros's ability, one of his key abilities is he can influence people's desire to do something. Not like Druig, where he can force people to do it.
His is Druig's mind control.
Eros is like persuasion. Like he can.
But he's also been so he's a lot. I of mean, these he, people,
he's also fast. He's also strong.
He's got the fighter, the regular fighter skills. A lot of these Eternals, the reason you're being introduced to them is because some of them become part of the Avengers team, and he is one of them. Becomes part of that. He's also been known, I think Newsrama put him as the fifth worst Avenger because he was a weirdo in the streets and a creep in the sheets.
Yep, that about does it.
That's like,
but here's the thing though. This is follow me here. This is my thought or theory. So one of the things that we have yet to continue to explore is something that was hinted at in Avengers Infinity War. And it coincides with the situation where Eros is capable of, but not just in that aspect, but also the ability to do so. My thought is that if the possibility to resurrect Thanos through Eros is something they're going to explore, I feel like they're going to take the part of Thanos that is still in the Soul Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the comics, the Soul Stone actually... has a world inside of it called Soul World. And in it, anybody who has been, you know, anybody who's come in contact with it or anybody and somehow gets a part of themselves imbued into... It's essentially a Horcrux.
Yeah, it is.
But people,
it's a dirty Horcrux.
But people can, like, people are living in this, like, green, lush land of the Soul World. And so my thought is that if... that is something they may explore. They may actually be able to use it not only to resurrect Thanos, but also possibly Tony Stark and the Black Widow. Because if you have this ability, or maybe there's a place where they have to take the stone, maybe there's like a whole like ritual to it. Because we are exploring the dark side of Marvel right now.
Mm.
You know, we've gotten witches and satanic rituals, and we've gotten witch trials, and we've gotten... all these different elements of
we're getting to the supernatural.
We are
it's
getting
not
to,
even dark Marvel is the best way to put it. We've seen the zombies. We've seen access to the other timelines of the multiverse. We're seeing a lot more of
not to mention the supernatural. We have Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness coming into play.
Yes.
So we have a lot of entrances into that. So maybe there's a ritual somewhere in the Darkhold that Scarlet Witch is aware of, and it's something that may be something on the horizon where we get a chance to see the just resurrection say,
you
of
just, you also wanted to see Mephisto. You just want
oh
Mephisto.
God no I don't although he's in the Infinity Gauntlet. I mean he if is. 7 degrees from Eros, I mean you got Mephisto somewhere
well
in there.
Even 1 degree from Eros you get Adam Warlock. So
I'm just saying whenever Mephisto actually shows up it has to be a really big reveal because everyone's been calling it since WandaVision started.
Oh yeah,
it was done so because that is woo. So my biggest thing was WandaVision and watching it. I love it. It's brilliant. And I keep going, House of M? House of M? House of M? We know what's happening in House of M. House of M. And everyone's like, no. And I'm like, but I won it.
And the worst part is that you had literally everything was there. You just had to just drop them in there and open like, oh yeah, we
all
knew
you
it.
Needed was the whispering, breathy voice in the background of something we couldn't determine. We go, Mephisto, it's there. It's the where's... Mephisto is the Where's Waldo of the MCU right now.
There you go.
Oh my gosh, who's the old man with the old wizard with
so
the cane?
I'm hoping that with Eros here, that kind of heralds that opportunity later down the road. Like, that would be interesting. I doubt we're going to see like a resurrection of Captain America or a return of Captain America, but I feel like, and I don't mean this in any negative way, I don't think Robert Downey Jr. can do anything else. So just be well, honest, his well, bread and butter is Iron
be,
Man.
Well, it's supposed to be Rhodey that picks up Iron Man, if it's not Riri. So traditionally in the comic books, the next
Iron
Man Iron up on
Heart,
the...
And yeah, and you
I, no, America, so Iron Heart is... Iron Patriot.
Iron Patriot
becomes
is Rhodey.
Iron Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
we don't get Riri till down way down the pipes.
But that's I don't know if we're gonna actually get that. I don't know if that's gonna be something Don Cheadle's gonna don to no offense no Don. Pun intended Don. But I feel like there's gonna be such a push that Robert Downey comes back into this in that way.
He's just an AI in the comics books, people.
Now, really quick, let's transition over to the last.
We didn't even talk about that. Pip is part of is like a foil for Adam Warlock. So we can talk about Adam Warlock. Look, we went back to Maze Runner. Keep going.
So, to the end credit scene, we get Dane Whitman, who previously in the film, who had an opportunity to kind of dig into his past and his heritage, states, you know, it's kind of complicated when it comes to talking about his heritage, because Dane Whitman comes from a long line of Black Knights. Now, I don't mean Black Knights so much. Well, yeah, in the Arthurian folklore as well, he's in it, or
none
the characters
shall
in it.
Pass.
But the Black Knight helms a very unique blade, the Ebony Blade, which is what we see in the scene. Now, the problem with the blade is that the blade is actually cursed, so every time you take life with it, it takes a little bit more of your sanity, ultimately driving you crazy.
Oh, that sounds bad.
So that is why that is why what was it that was carved into the thing?
Death is my reward.
Because you go so insane
That dying is the blessing.
So uniquely enough, there's a mention in the film where Cersei says, hey, you know, you should really reconnect with your uncle and kind of mend things or whatever, blah, 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 blah. The thing is, Dane Whitman's uncle was once a Black Knight. However, he also used it so often that it drove him so insane that he ultimately became a villain. Now, there's a lot of... Let me take a step back. There's not a lot of lore in terms of like seeing the Black Knight in opportunities where he teams up with a lot of other folks, such as the disembodied voice we get at the end of that scene,
Howling.
which was confirmed by the director Chloe Zhao that it is Mahershala Ali's blade.
Yes.
Now, whether or not if he's in the room or if it's, you know, however that dynamic goes, he says something, you know, do you really want to
do that, Mr. Whitman?
Do you really want to do that, Mr. Whitman, or whatever? Blade, obviously, there's a ton of lore on Blade. Blade has been around for a good amount of time. And his storyline has been seen in several different adaptations, whether if it was on the big screen with Wesley Snipes. There's also an animated version of Blade as well, but there's only been like very, very few instances where the Black Knight and Blade team up. most notably is his stint with MI-13.
Midnight Suns.
They weren't in the same team on Midnight Suns.
I know, but I just, they're all Suns. With an O, not a U.
MI-13 is essentially the English version of, like, the paranormal Avengers, like the Dark Avengers. And so they actually kind of fight against the things, like, kind of like with Constantine and so forth. Unfortunately, but in the stint where they actually work together, Blade is essentially ousted after he tries to kill one of the other team members who is a vampire. So that doesn't last very long.
A particular vampire.
But the idea that they're going to bring somebody as, I don't know, unknown as the Black Knight into the MCU, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, he is dating Cersei, which is part of the game. I think it's part of the Gaiman run. So that connection is actively there. Which makes sense. Because again, like I mentioned with the other scene, Pip is a foil for Adam Warlock, which brings in Adam Warlock and the entire Guardians of the Galaxy and that rest of that.
Because we get a glimpse of the incubation chamber, if you will, for Adam Warlock at the end of Guardians 2.
Yes. And gosh, that string was hanging there for so flipping long. And I'm so glad they're like, hey, we're going to pull it. And surprise, it's a person that you probably hated when you were a kid or when he was a kid. Either way.
Well, yeah, they've announced the casting of the guy who plays Adam Warlock.
He was Eustace in the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that version, and I hated him. And I really didn't like him in Maze Runner at all either. He just looked like a frumpy frump. And then suddenly He looked like a frumpy frump.
It's very accurate.
He's a good actor, but I hate him so much, which tells me
Will Poulter.
Tells me he's a good actor if I hate him that much.
I mean, his recent headshot, I mean, he doesn't look too bad in terms of...
Oh, no, he's done a
lot. He's grown up. Eustace is grown up.
He's grown up. But so we're basically, each of these scenes has been taking in aspects of phase four, of phase five, and connecting, going, you liked phase one and phase two, phase three. Here's phase four. We're making everybody like, let's trail, grab your strings, come this way. And then the same thing they're doing with Blade, because let's be honest. The only thing that ties the Black Knight to the Eternals, to that section of the universe, is the relationship between Dane and Cersei. That's it. There's nothing else. So if you want to pull the Dark Avengers, you want to pull the supernatural, mystic, more mystic Marvel side into the mainstream, you can't just rely solely on Doctor Strange to do it. You need somebody else to kind of wiggle their way in. And why not have a cosmic entity and, you know, a guy that's cursed since, you know, oh, I don't know, Arthurian times? And
well, the sword that's cursed.
Yes. Well, his entire lineage is pretty much cursed at this point. Way to go, Sir Percy.
Which, I mean, it's
sorry,
interesting.
Sorry, Spencer. This is an aggressive, like, deep-seated Marvel talk right now.
Spencer's like, I got no stake in this.
No, I really no don't. Like, especially, like the thing was, like, with these two end credit scenes, like, they were, like, they felt like deep, like, long-term things. And I was like,
yeah. Well, and they were very, like super fan recognizable.
If you know,
like,
then you know type of jams.
Yeah.
Was the hardest part because, again, this movie was the same kind of thing. Like, if you knew what was going on, you're just like, oh. And the kind of same thing with the Eternals. The Eternals, in such a way, you don't need to know all of it, but you need to be invested. And then if you were invested and you were taking a risk on it, but you had no idea what was going on in those last two scenes, you're just like, I should be excited about what?
Yeah, well, and I told, after I saw it, I called Amy and I told her, you know, I don't know how I feel about this. And she's like, oh, is that, blah, blah. And I'm like, that sounds a lot like a DC fan. Like, the idea that, I don't mean it in a bad way. I just mean it in terms of, like, a lot of the early, like, hoorah and whatever was based on, oh, because you don't know, you had to see the animated version, and then the special edition had this and that, and then you got to watch this scene, and then if you pause it at 13.4 seconds, and you could see the... Like, I get it. It's one that resonates with people who are aware of the immensely niche fan base of these particular groups of characters, But for the people who are coming in to find some kind of recognition or even some ability to say, okay, I can get on this. I don't know if this particular story really gave that to us. And the end credits, which the opportunity should have been in the end credits, to give us something more to chew on. Like, even we saw, everybody here, we saw Venom, the most recent one. And mind you, the movie was just... It was that's kind of lacking.
The nicest that we can put in there. Like, but, I like you, Tom Hardy, but homie.
But that end credit scene, though.
That movie was all about the end credit scene.
Like, that was the movie.
That was
the movie.
We're like, take my $11. Thank you.
Now, can we say that we got that same effect out of this movie?
So the weirdness in me, because I'm the comic book person... Well, we can deep dive all day and I can go Black Knight, King the Conqueror, Avengers, Eternals, Ultimates. I can have that conversation, but anybody else goes, what? Like, that's pretty much what we're wrapping up to. Mm. We're getting Avengers, Dark Avengers. We're getting Blade. Black Knight helps the Avengers and Doctor Strange fight King the Conqueror. King the Conqueror, who we love you. We need some Jonathan Majors water. He was so, gosh, he's so good.
Yeah, he was great.
He's so good. I'm so excited. And it means he's long-term game plan, period.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. But he's in that mix. And Black Knight's in that mix. And we have Blade coming in, which will be in that mix, which will tie hopefully over to Sony. And then when we're moving through, now since we're tying all to the Eternals all the way up, we're trying to basically bring in the cosmic and the mystic and the supernatural aspects. We're creating the black hole at Earth 616 right now. And we're trying to just suck everybody into the middle of the Earth 616 and trying to deal with it. And if you don't know, it is an overwhelm of information. It's overwhelming information.
Yeah.
Because then you're just like, I don't know. This is nobody recognizable to me. And for anybody that was knew that they were coming out with another Blade, Mahershala Ali, I was like, like, that got me excited. But yeah. But that's the difference between somebody who's in the fandom, where they're giving those niblets for fan service, versus everybody after the fact who had to Google, like Google the Black Knight, Google what does the end credit mean, Google who is Arrow Star Fox. Like, what happened to Cersei? What happened to Faustus? Like, all of those questions are compiling, where I think it's going to do twofold things. It's going to drive people to, one, use their Google a lot more, mm-hmm. or seek out people that know, and hopefully re-energize the Marvel backlog of comic books.
Yeah, I generally fall into the category of people who, like, the end credit scenes are like, some of them like, I don't know who this is. And other like, I know who that is. And like, so okay. Some of it is, yeah, like some of it, like I'm used to like having to be like, okay, Google, hey, let me call up this person, see how they're doing. Also get them to explain this to me because I don't understand. But like, I don't know. Like there's something about this. But like, I feel like it's because of the way this movie was, that by the time I got to the end credits, I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because something like this really does put a sway in the viewership of those people who are coming to learn more about the next phase, the next saga, but at the same time can also be dismayed by the lack of information that we've come to kind of expect for the mid and end credit scene. So who knows? But as Amy so aptly put it, wrapping up, I want to go ahead and go around the table and let's see where we land with our thoughts and now we're going to rate the film. So let's go ahead and start with Amy. Does the film pass or fail? And how many monocles?
I think I'm going to be the dissenting opinion on this, but this film passes for me. Yes, it is watchable. It has a beginning, middle, and an end, and it has a story, even though you might not fully understand it. I enjoy the direction, and while it is long and a lot of people seemingly needed to get up to the bathroom because they could not stay engaged or it was just drowning them a little bit. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Beautiful scenery, wonderful acting, and even though Marvel is working to transition and they might be fumbling a little bit, I'm here for it. And yay, Jack the King Kirby. 4 out of 5 monocles. Okay.
Spencer, go ahead.
This movie does pass for me. While this movie is not my cup of tea, there is still some quality to it that like really deserves to be checked out. Definitely when this movie comes to Disney Plus, definitely going to take a look at those like, special features.
I'm not going to the drive-in again. No,
I'm not. Stay away from the drive-in version of this movie. I'm going to definitely check it out because like I do want to know more of the backstory of like behind the scenes stuff of this movie.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Like there was like a lot of talent and I know people did like a lot of work and I want to see what they did, you know, especially that whole comment about practical effects.
Yeah,
like, this movie kind of looks like it was mostly green screen. Yeah. So like, now I'm like, what was practical? I want to see that. So I'm definitely going to come back.
The Titan at the end was practical.
But for me, this is going to get a 3 out of 5. Like, you know, check it out. It might be for you. It might not.
On my end, I'm going to have to say the film does pass. It does have a decent storyline that really does come to fruition towards the tail end. It does do what Marvel does most and create this consistent and continual narrative where we have to see the next film to see what happens to our characters that we've been engaged in for the last 2 hours. In terms of monocles, I'm going to have to say this film gets, as well as Spencer, a 3. It's not exactly my cup of tea, but it definitely can find its fan base somewhere, as obviously as we've heard from this table so far. I just hope that with this, Marvel continues to learn and grow how they present their films, not only to the masses, but also to the people who are hardcore fans of the films and not so much the, you know, comic books, and have the opportunity to give them a chance to catch up, if you will. So, yeah, that about wraps up another awesome show of the Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on all of our stream, on all of our social media platforms over at facebook.com/Filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at Filmlosophy101. We'd love to hear from you there. Drop us a line. Also, you can check us out on any streaming platform, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora. We are wherever you stream podcasts. Give us a follow and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Also, you can check out our website at filmlosophers.com. Like I said, we have over 290 episodes now. So you can check out our entire full library there. We've got some great stuff all the way from the hilarious first few episodes where we're still learning all the way to our more recent ones where we're still learning, and you can tune in there. This was a great episode and a great conversation, and mind you, with Marvel comes a lot more than just regular movies. It comes with, you know, the expectation of greatness that they've already bestowed upon us thus far. So here's to hoping that they continue their level of greatness. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Amy.
Class dismissed.